Welcome to Scary Basement. Press X to scream. Every month, me and my friend Roxy are drawn once more, still inexplicably and still supernaturally, into this basement, wherein lurks every scary thing that has ever been in a video game, including a super long underwater level, a missable achievement that means you'll have to play the whole game again if you want the platinum, and a final boss battle that introduces an entirely new mechanic that is not like anything that happened in the game before. My name is Mikey McCollar.
And I'm Roxy Polk.
Roxy, here on Press X to Scream, we talk about horror video games. And there are two potential ways that you're hearing this episode. Either you're subscribed to the Super NPC Radio Patreon at the $10 DJ Toad tier, in which case, thank you for being a Patreon.
Or you're listening later in the future, when we release this episode for free on our own feed. In which case, consider subscribing to Super NPC Radio Patreon at patreon.com/supernpcradio. Then you'll not only gain early access to a monthly episode of Press X to Scream, where me and Mikey play through and discuss a scary video game,
but you'll also get access to literally years of video game podcasts put out by the rest of the folks at Super NPC Radio. It's a great deal.
But now that that's out of the way, let's check in with the loathsome demon bot, who will tell us which game we're playing this month.
And remember, if we haven't played this game yet, we do forfeit our souls to the demon bot, which he will then discard because our bodies are empty and are therefore up for grabs.
This demon bot just hates being a demon.
Mikey and Roxy, this month you were assigned the puzzle platform game Inside, developed by Playdead and released for PlayStation 4, Xbox One, and Microsoft Windows in 2016 with later ports for iOS, Nintendo Switch, and macOS. Did you play the game, or are your souls forfeit?
Okay, Roxy, thankfully I have played Inside before. Have you played it?
Yes, I have played Inside.
Then you may keep your souls. For now.
He just crawled through a little hole in the roof.
Oh, damn.
Roxy, okay, we're in the scary basement, as we all know.
Uh-huh.
The demon bot just crawled up into the second floor.
I mean, there's a million floors. We might be in the basement, but we don't know how far down we are. I feel like it changes every day, every week, every time we're here.
Absolutely.
Every second we perceive it, probably.
It absolutely should be said that the scary basement is a non-Euclidean space. Anyhow, we have played the video game Inside. But just in case there's anyone listening up at the cellar door who hasn't played Inside, what do you say we give them a quick summary of the whole thing?
That would be wonderful. Let's do it, Mikey.
And real quick, if you haven't played Inside yet, this is your warning. We're going to do spoilers.
Major spoilers, literally the entire plot, guys.
Gear up. Inside, it's a 2016 game by Playdead Studios, and honestly, it's pretty straightforward.
You start the game as a faceless boy in the woods, and for unknown reasons, there are men in masks with flashlights and guard dogs on the hunt for you. Any mistakes, and these men and or dogs will brutally kill you. Just straight up, no hesitation.
As this nameless, faceless boy, you'll solve puzzles, pushing boxes, and making bridges to progress. Eventually, you make your way out of the woods and into this massive complex, where there are more puzzles. Here in the complex, you find some kind of experiments are being performed on similarly nameless, faceless, zombie-like people.
And then suddenly, you'll come across a puzzle that can't be solved, unless you find a dangling mind control helmet that lets you control some of those pseudo-zombies hanging around in the complex.
You'll continue solving puzzles, eventually getting controlling multipliers, wherein you control one guy by hopping into a mind control helmet, who then hops into another mind control helmet to control another guy to move forward.
Eventually, you'll find a long underwater section where you'll pilot a submersible past a furious mermaid child who wants to kill you, like everything else. And when you're eventually captured by that mermaid child, actually, they give you the ability to breathe underwater. Did you die? Who knows, but now you can progress.
Finally, the boy comes upon a white-collar office where scientists and security personnel observe something in a massive tank of water. But when you finally enter this tank, you find that inside is a massive blob comprised of people and limbs and flesh.
Just a flesh blob. My God. Okay. You then take control of this flesh blob as it absorbs the boy, and once it's free, you go on a rampage through the offices, smashing your way to freedom. With a little help from some of the rogue scientists. By the way, this thing is screaming and making horrible noises every step of the way as you move.
The blob eventually makes its way out of the complex and to the coast of the ocean, seemingly free of whatever experiments led to its creation. What's next for the flesh blob? How is this thing supposed to function in society? Is it going to get a frickin' job at Kinko's? What's going on here? Roxy, that is the video game Inside.
That's the video game by Playdead Inside.
Oh.
2016. Did you play this game before when it came out, Mikey, or is this your first time playing it for the podcast?
I played this game right when it first came out, to the point where when I downloaded it, it's on Xbox Game Pass right now, I downloaded it and played through it, and later started getting achievements, and then went and looked through and still had my old achievements from like 2016.
Oh my god, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Blast from
so
the past.
I was well-versed in this game, but again, like, I kind of only remembered the big bullet points. I remember the mermaid, I remember getting to the flesh blob, and that was kind of it.
Okay. Yeah, there's, like, a lot of little intricate things or, like, weird interactions you have. So I didn't play this game when it originally came out. I actually, I don't know if this is gonna make you mad at me or make me mad at myself. I watched a playthrough of it, a Let's Play, like back in the day, because I did not have the time to play it and I didn't own it. Probably not in my video game budget at the time.
Roxy, I will never be mad at anybody for watching a video game. I think that's okay. So valid. I think that's so important. We don't have time. We're all adults. We're trying to get through things. Watch the Halo Combat Evolved campaign on YouTube. Who
and
cares?
There you go. Hell yeah. My friend Master Chief.
You want to stay up to date on the adventures of Master Chief.
I know. How else am I going to know? He doesn't text. He doesn't call. He's got enough going on trying to save the world. So I originally watched this, so it didn't like stick in my brain as much. Like I remember some really neat things about it, like the twists and turns. I remember being like very shocked when you first see that flesh blob and also very confused, like what the fuck is going on? But so actually playing it for real this time in preparation for the podcast and everything, I'm so glad I finally played it. It's been something that's been on my list forever to actually play it myself, and having years of distance now was great because I forgot a lot of things that I had seen initially, and it's such a different experience to be playing it as opposed to just watching it.
Yeah. That was something that I noticed specifically about this game, that, like, you could there are so many scenes, because this game is like a 2D side-scroller, right?
Yes, yeah. And you're always going...
So you're running from left to right.
Right, yes.
But there's still, like, this three-dimensional space that this character exists within, so a lot of times you'll see, like, running on the Z-axis, like, a guard dog running towards you.
Oh, God, yeah.
And
or that fucking pig.
That, to me, is the scariest part of this game. And there's something about watching a character just by the skin of their teeth make it out of a dangerous situation. And then there is feeling like you are controlling it, like you have put yourself into this character and you are pushing the thumbstick and you just barely made it.
Yeah.
And I think here's a weird take. This game almost feels in a lot of its, like, for lack of a better term, combat sections, like a rhythm game. Like you kind of have to like time.
It's very timing. Yes, it's timing based.
Yeah. You have to time what you're doing to escape, like, not getting killed by all the various monsters. Mm-hmm.
And one of my favorite games of all time is Little Nightmares 2, which has some similarities to this as well, where you're, like, a small child in a brutal world that just wants to kill you. And I think this kind of genre of these types of games, they really thrive on these sorts of chase scenes or these, like... Not exactly like pinpoint precision, but like well-timed sequences that feel very natural, like with things chasing you or with having to solve some of these puzzles. There's a section where you have to stand in line and act exactly like the other mindless like puppets around you. And
yeah, it's almost like a factory, like they're sending these puppets through the line. You have to pretend to be
one. You've got like a spotlight on you where this drone is watching you to make sure you don't fuck up. So you have to like sync yourself up with these guys. So it's like literally kind of like a flash mob. There you go. Just syncing up with these other NPCs in this way, which is really neat. And it's like puzzle solving in a way too, because like the first time you get there and do that, you might not know that's what you need to do. And so you might fuck up and get killed immediately. And like, that's one of the ways that this game kind of like, it doesn't super punish you. Like if you die, you don't get sent back a super far distance. So then you can retry and figure it out again. And especially like with some of these puzzles where you are controlling a guy who's controlling a guy and stuff, it gets very layered and intricate. And this is all like without any dialogue or notes or anything. They're all like very intuitive. They're all kind of like based on motion in one way or another.
It's like pure visual storytelling and like exploration storytelling.
Yeah.
Were there any puzzles that just like really stumped you? I had a couple that I was just like, this is not a solvable puzzle.
I can't recall any in particular, but I think the first time you had to have a guy controlling another guy, I was like, only your main character has the ability to do that though, right? So it took me a little bit to be like, oh no, okay, so it's kind of like an amplifier, so you're still controlling that guy even though that guy's controlling that guy. It's a little mind-bendy, but like in a very inventive and interesting way.
That was a very cool one, yeah.
What about you?
I remember that realization being like, oh, my guy can control another guy, like, how deep is this going? And the answer was, pretty deep. I mean, kind of deep. They went one or two more layers deep. There is one puzzle where you take control of a guy. Like, you're like, there's a mind helmet dangling and you hop up into it. And then you take control of a guy who's on like a rail cart above you.
Okay.
And he like pushes the rail cart along. So you're like dangling and going along for the ride. Mm-hmm. And you come across like a grate that you can't get through.
Okay.
And I was just like, this is not a solvable puzzle because you have to like drop down and then you can't control the guy and then there's no way to press the switch to like do it. And I realized that is gibberish.
This one. Yeah. Okay. So how do you end up solving it? I'm sorry. I can't remember a specific one.
There's like, once you get across this wide gap, there's a little box at the like you come to a ridge and there's a little box that you could hop down on and then you hop. This is, I realize I am describing this as poorly as a thing can be described.
I mean, it's kind of hard to describe this when you're like, there's a button, there's a switch, there's a thing in a video game. Like, imagine this environment, please.
You have to leave the cart a ways before you go in and press the switch yourself.
Okay,
and
so you backtrack, come back. Basically.
Yes.
Okay.
And I spent maybe 20 minutes just being like, well, nothing to do. Nothing you can do here. And I've heard... I remember reading or hearing people talk about this on podcasts and read an article about like one of the very first puzzles where you like use a machine and you have to like trick a bunch of chickens into following you.
Oh, God.
Suck the chickens into a machine and shoot them out at a hay bale that you can then use as a
and
block.
And they're not just chickens. They're like little chicks. They're like little babies who are following you around.
And I don't know. I feel like this get like that kind of is the mark of like well-designed puzzles for me when that puzzle was super simple for me, but the cart pushing puzzle was almost impossible. It sounds like you kind of didn't have any real struggles with any one puzzle in particular that like really caught you for a while. I remember my very first time playing through thinking that the mermaid section was impossible.
It is very, like, scary, too. So it's kind of like you have to keep the light on the mermaid so it doesn't kill you while navigating this dark space in a submersible and then figuring out where the hell you're supposed to go. I mean, you just – the only direction you ever usually get is just keep going right. But how are you going to keep going right? You don't know yet. So you're having to manage this enemy that can instantly kill you because basically every enemy in this game instantly kills you. You either succeed or you fail. So you're managing not dying while trying to figure out what's happening. So you have to like aim the light generally at your front because if the mermaid is where you need to go, you can't go there. So you're like keeping the light on the thing at your back while trying to like backwards navigate like around areas and stuff. So it makes it very tense. It's also a very different kind of like way to control your character than you have been.
I remember the first time I played this game, and I don't know that I ever put it together. I think I just lucked in, like not realizing that the light made the mermaid girl freeze.
Oh,
and just
really?
Thinking like, I have to just hope she stops sometimes.
Oh,
and sometimes I guess she stopped just enough for me to get through. Yeah, seems impossible.
Which actually, that brings up a little thing. Like, are all of these creatures afraid of light in that way? Because if so, like when the blob ends up at like the end of that cliff with the light shining on it, is it just frozen there? Can it not move? It made me think of it this time, which I had never even thought of it before. But like you also see, maybe this is too deep getting into like part of the ending stuff. I don't know if we want to front load talking about other stuff first. We can.
No, I think we're ready to talk about what this game
is
like, about.
Just everything in general. It's doing a lot of things. But like when you get to the lab area and you smash through like one of the enclosures, it is like a small replica of that cliff, of that area where you smash out of and end up at the end. So like one of the theories about this game is you didn't really escape. That's still part of the experiment. It's happened before. And maybe what this whole thing leads up to is getting the blob to that point where it can control things and end up there. And then you're frozen in the light, and then the company can just come scoop you up and use you for whatever. Who knows? That could just be a little nod to them being like, it'd be cool to like reuse this asset and just put this little thing here. Or is it a big lore thing that has implications? Who knows? They never say. There's no text.
This game is very like stoic. And we've talked on our podcast about Let the Right One In, a movie that just gives you a bullet point of information. You kind of take with it what you want.
Yeah.
And I feel like this game does that a lot where it's that's an interesting interpretation. And I hadn't
I didn't even really notice it looked like that, because, of course, you don't know that cliff looks like that until you get there. So like I was looking up some other videos because spoiler alert, I didn't get every secret. I didn't 100% this game, but I wanted to look up what the other secrets were, because there is like an alternate ending that could have different interpretations. So when I was looking up those, someone pointed that out, and I was like, oh my god, it was there. Okay. Yeah, what does that mean? I don't know. But it's fun to think about.
So let's talk about like some big picture stuff. Like, I think you were playing as the blob the whole time. Is that fair to say?
That is one of the theories that I saw. I think the other ending kind of makes you think it could be different. But yeah, like when I first played through that, that's what I assumed. That's what I thought it was by the time you get there. Because, like, why would the kid be doing that just to get absorbed? I guess if there's something else controlling him, he doesn't care about the kid. So it's fine for him to get absorbed, and then you're taking control of this thing. Maybe you're something else much farther away just trying to stop this experiment. Or you're the blob itself trying to save itself. Those were basically the two thoughts I had. Especially because, like, the blob just sits at the end, so I'm like, was it trying to escape just so it could feel anything? Just so, I don't know, maybe it wanted to die. Maybe it is going to die there. Who knows? Or just wanted freedom to escape, and it'll figure out the rest on its own. Who knows? Or it's just more about the act of escaping and defiance of exploding this facility so you can get the fuck out. Maybe that's the thing to take away from it. So that's kind of, I was a little like questioning. It's another reason why it made me so excited just thinking about the game. It made me want to like do a deep dive to be like, well, what other stuff is there? So Mikey, when you beat it, did you think, yeah, I'm the blob?
I thought, yes, I'm the blob, and I thought the fact that there were enough puzzles where you, as the boy, were controlling a guy who was controlling another guy, I was like, well, why isn't there just one step back the other way? Why isn't there just somebody controlling the boy?
Yeah.
And when we, and I, this feels like hindsight being 2020, I feel like I remember thinking that the first time I played through this game myself. I don't know if that's true or not, but I remember thinking like, I'll bet there's something controlling him too.
Yeah, the text of the game showing you that, I think it's a very natural thing to come to that conclusion. I think without saying it, the game implies that before you even like find out other stuff. Especially because like, yeah, he's a little different. Like he has hair. None of the like adults. That's another thing too. We don't know if these are like normal humans who were then converted into these things, or if they were like, I know, some sort of tank bred or science experiment thing that was created to be this way. And you start needing the helmet to mind control, and then after the mermaid attacks you and attaches a thing to you, you gain the ability to not only breathe underwater, but now you can control them without a helmet. So it kind of like levels up your abilities, but also changes the implications of what your character is and what he can do now.
I have no answer to this. I think I might just shrug. What do we take from the mermaid girl and from that moment where you essentially drown? Like, this whole game has a mechanic where you can only be underwater for so long. And then there's a moment where the mermaid girl grabs you and you drown for a long time, pulls you deep underwater, and then gives you some sort of like, I thought it was like another version of a mind control helmet.
That's what it looks like. That's what I assumed it was.
And then from then on, you can breathe underwater. And like you said, you can control these characters. Like, what do we take from this mermaid girl?
Yeah,
that's what the mermaid girl about?
That is a good question. I honestly don't know. It seems like she was, well, we don't even know if it's a she, honestly, with how formless it is. I assumed it was an experiment that was too powerful for the scientists to control, so they kind of just, like, abandoned her in this abandoned section of the facility that nobody can access anymore. Maybe she can only exist underwater, so, like, they don't have to worry about her coming on land to cause problems, so they can just, like, abandon that section and leave her there without having to kill her. Or, I don't know, maybe she was the culmination of wanting to be able to control things. Like, if the blob can control people and she gives you this ability to be able to control things as well, like, maybe it was a progression in their experimentation where this thing was too agile and too good at defending itself. So then they evolved to do this thing with the blob where it's like, it's not a single mind, assumedly, because there's multiple different body parts and shit. So it might be, and also just like the mass, the only way it can like defend itself is by literally using its mass to like slam on things. Like, there's a part where you just splat a guy from a great height, and that's how you and defend yourself.
It's pretty cool.
So I'm not quite sure like what she was in and of itself, and the fact that she is like trying to grab you and like drown you. There's also, it made me think, like, has our character been dead, maybe? Like, are these people even alive? Are they just kind of like soulless puppets, or maybe they were never even alive to begin with? I don't know. So did he die and then it doesn't matter because you can just control a corpse anyway? Or did he get, like, yeah, Mega Man power-up where now, like, he just is stronger and it was just kind of like the illusion of death because he was transitioning from one ability to the next? I don't know.
I'll tell you my thinking on it. And okay. I don't know how, like, I am really enamored. I think the only other video game I can remember really doing this pretty well is Destiny.
Okay.
Where, like, you build in a reason why your character is dying and coming back. Because there's the video game mechanic, you know, Mario has four lives and he dies and he can die four times and come back. Like, Destiny has this, like, narrative caveat where you have this, like, force in you that, like, regenerates you when you die.
Okay.
And so in thinking about Inside, like, I kind of like the idea that if we're saying the blob is controlling one of these meat husks, that every time you die, every time you get killed by a guard dog or whatever, the blob just starts back over from the beginning, takes him all the way back, and the game is just like cutting out the stuff you've already seen. And so in thinking about this mermaid girl, like, she's been killing you because she's trying to find the one meat puppet that can survive underwater because you need to get that far underwater to get to the blob.
Okay.
Just made that up. I don't know if that's the case, but like, I do kind of like the idea that the mermaid girl has been on your side the whole time, that they're trying to drown you because they know that to get to this blob and finally release it, you're going to have to go through so much water that we just got to put you through your paces. You know, it's like a mentor looking for the chosen one. And the only way to find out is to like stab a baby. You got to just keep killing babies until you find a baby who doesn't die from it. And it's like, wow, the prophecy is true.
You know, why don't more Chosen One stories start like that?
It's actually, I mean, I might jot that down. That's like a funny movie idea.
Honestly, it is. I like that a lot. I think with the fact that this game makes a lot of choices that can be interpreted in different ways, too, like, you might be correct. You might not be correct. We don't know, but I think that you can interpret that from that. She is ultimately trying to do something that helps you. And then after she gives you the ability to breathe underwater, she goes away and doesn't bother you anymore as well. So
yeah, it like if she has fulfilled her purpose, then it's like, yeah, go forth and find God.
Yeah, sure. Go find the blob. It's your new God now. Yeah, I'd say the mermaid part too, after you gain the ability to breathe, I think it's right then, right? Where like the water is upside down or like gravity is weird. Is it there?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's right there, which is absolutely crazy because then you have these humanoid bodies that appear suspended upside down, but really you're the one that's upside down.
Yeah.
I think, right?
It's cool.
It's a very, very haunting and cool visual design. I really like it a lot. And it's also just like, what the fuck was happening here? What are they doing here? And they're attached to like the brain control things as well. Like that's essentially where they're being like, God, they're like attached from the ground or the ceiling, whichever, to these brain things. And then they're just floating in the water as well. So all of them can breathe underwater too. So like the mermaid girl could have just been one of them that escaped.
Yeah.
No, and I would think like her long hair seems to imply that she has survived and been alive down there for a long time, I would guess. Maybe.
Yeah, maybe just looking for another anomaly like herself that can breathe underwater.
Yeah, exactly.
Because she's in communion with the blob. I kind of like that idea.
Yeah, and that's also the thing, too. Like, maybe everything is controlled by the blob. Could be.
Yeah. This is something I'm wondering about from you, Roxy. Like, what would you say is the big scary thing that this game is poking at? Because this game is scary, but, like, it's kind of unsettling on, like, a core level for me. Did you get any of that?
Yeah. So, I think it's dealing with a couple of different things. And the secret ending, I think, expounds on that further and adds a completely different element to it as well.
Yes, I agree. What is the secret ending, real quick? Do you want to describe
it? So, yeah, the secret ending, you have to take all these steps to eventually figure it out. But basically, the cornfield that you run through relatively early in the game has a secret bunker, which is very easy to miss. I definitely missed it my first time. So in the secret bunker, there's like a lever that if you put in the right code, directional code, you can open it, and it then reveals in this bunker, somebody or something has been down there. There's like canned food, and then there's another control helmet with a ton of cords leading into screen. And then on the far wall that you can access, there is a big cord plugged into the wall. And one of the things you will notice is as you walk by, one of those cords, or like some of the cords, appear to be moving, the ones that are attached to the screens. Implying that this is, they're controlling your character, maybe.
Uh-huh.
You go over to this cord that you can interact with, this giant one, and if you pull it out of the wall, then the boy deactivates and those screens turn off, and then the game ends, and that's another ending. So I took that to imply that the screens are you, the player, in a meta-narrative way, controlling the boy, and you're effectively just choosing to not play the game anymore. So it's like connecting to the outside world, and yeah, it brings a player into this game and kind of toys with the idea then of like being a player controlling a character. What is that world like? What is that character? What agency do they really have? Because they only exist when the player is here to make them move. And what does that say about
I like that
control in general, I guess, in a way.
That is very much the vibe I was getting from it, too. I think it is about control, and specifically a lack of control, about, like, not knowing what is controlling you.
Yeah.
Putting yourself in the perspective of any of the various NPCs that you
mind control. Yeah, because these characters have no idea.
Right, they have no idea. And then I do feel like the reveal that, like, maybe we're playing as the blob controlling the boy this whole time is like, oh, I'm being
faceless
controlled.
Mass of players also.
Yes. And this idea that, like, there's an alternate ending where in, acknowledging that this boy is literally being controlled by somebody else. It's you, buddy.
Mm-hmm.
Guess what? Like, why couldn't there be something else inside us? The way that that boy is inside everything else, and theoretically that blob is inside the boy. Why couldn't there be something inside of us? What if we're nothing more than a submersible being piloted by a force we neither see nor understand? That's a horrifying concept.
Yeah, and I mean, on that same note, like the concept of a soul, or like a soul being what drives your body or something. I've heard all kinds of crazy like theories that meta-science, metaphysical kind of ideas where it's like, oh yeah, your soul is on a different plane of existence or something and it is connecting to your body and then doing that. You know, like that kind of
idea. I like that. That's interesting.
Which is just, yeah, it's something fun to think about, to be like, yeah, does the soul exist? Who knows? We'll find out when we die, I guess. Everybody finds out eventually.
This is the first game where you get to play as a soul.
Maybe, yeah.
Besides Murdered Soul Suspect. I don't know if that's an actual game. I know I've heard that title before. Game.
You get to play as a fedora detective who solves his own murder and is hunted right, by ghosts. Whatever. Town of Salem, cool. I think. Anyway, it also seems to deal with this like classes system and like conformity versus... I guess maybe revolution isn't the right word, but I can't tell, again, if these people who are mindless were made that way or if they were existing humans who were forced to be that way. Because when you get to the...
I don't think we get an answer.
You don't get an answer, but you can see with the other adults in the labs that they appear to be individuals who are conscious of their own thought and moving around. They're like scared when the blob is there, or they will help you when the blob is there, or they're trying to manipulate you. To go to a certain place. But they seem to have control and agency over their themselves, and I don't think you would ever be able to put on a hat and control them or anything either. So it begs the question, what is the difference here? But bottom line is, even if they're bred to be that way and they're not like converted, I mean, it's scary either way. But they have, they have essentially controlled, like, or controlled. They have created a slave labor class to just do all these menial things for them, whether it's household work, factory work, any number of things you see them doing. Sometimes they're in suits, sometimes they're in overalls, sometimes they got nothing at all.
Roxy, you dive into any story deep enough and it all comes down to, do androids dream of electric sheep?
We're just playing it out.
We're just questioning again and again.
But it does bring into question this, like, upper class who is completely fine with just victimizing and using those people below them, and how people in power will abuse that power, like, in this case, absolutely, to horrifying degrees if left unchecked. And so when you finally get to control the blob and, like, fuck shit up, it is so satisfying, even though, like, the blob is making some of the most horrifying noises I think I've heard in a while, but are also kind of funny sometimes when you, like, biff into a wall. It's incredibly satisfying to just demolish shit and run roughshod over everything. And then when you finally escape and roll down that hill, it's very satisfying no matter what the outcome is.
It does. It does feel nice to, like, finally, like, break free. It feels like you're playing as Free Willy, who's finally escaping from SeaWorld.
Yep, truly. It's a really good analogy.
Roxy, did you have was there a scary moment for you? Is there a moment that, like, sticks with you as the scariest moment from this game?
Oh, God. It's hard to say what the scariest one would be, but definitely, like, the first time that pig gets up and chases you and is, like, squealing at you and just charging, and you're like, I don't know what I'm supposed to do. It takes you a couple seconds to realize, okay, it's charging at you. You have to make it charge through the door. And then it's still coming after you, and then you have to make it hit the wall and then pull, like, the worm out of its ass or something. It's, like, it's scary at first, and then it continues to be scary, then it's just disturbing and gross. And then after that, you're just like, okay, I can just push the pig around and use as a platform to jump on now. It's so weird. And it's like,
I like that description so much of a worm from its ass. I read that as his tail.
Oh, God, I hope it was the tail. I hope that's all it was. But you see, like, the white worms who control things, kind of.
That could be. Yeah, that to me made me think that the humans that they were making, like, the humans we end up controlling are being made and are not, like, as stable as the rest. And then, therefore, if this pig was made, then it's, like, tail isn't as connected as it could be in a real pig.
One of the implications that I think watching some other videos, seeing what other people are saying, it like confirmed a thing I was thinking about, was like, these are little parasitic worms that can control things. Like, those sorts of creatures exist in real life. So maybe scientists found those and then experimented on them to a criminal degree to make humans that are like that, that they could be controlled by reverse engineering it. So you're seeing, like, some of these squiggly, maybe more basic versions of these parasites, or this technology, for lack of a better word, that they've developed.
Yeah, that's the Resident Evil 4 story, right? There are all these normal-looking people, but we find out they've got bugs inside them, controlling them.
Yep.
That's cool. That's a cool thing.
That was a neat idea that, what are these things? Because they move independent as well. And did you ever play, what is the other game this studio made, the one that they made before?
Inside? Oh,
Limbo.
Wheel of Fortune.
Yes, Wheel of Fortune. Did you play Limbo at all?
You know, I have tried Limbo a number of times, and I feel like I always get to, like, a very early boss. I feel like I fight a spider, and I'm just like, I'm out.
Wow, there's bosses.
Not because I'm afraid of spiders, but just, like, I couldn't understand the mechanic it wanted me to do to get past it. So I feel like I've bounced on Limbo a couple of times. Should I give it another go?
I have not played it, so I cannot speak to that.
Oh, okay.
But something else I saw as a little detail is that apparently these white worm things are in Limbo. So there's a theory that they are in the same universe, or it was just a little nod by the developers to be like, yeah, this thing was in Limbo and now it's here. But it seems like such a big plot point in this game. So who knows? Having never played Limbo, I cannot say for sure whether it does make a connected universe or it's a little nod. I think it's good either way. neat little factoid.
This game feels way more like sci-fi than Limbo, that feels like ephemeral, like post-death.
Yeah, sort of. You're in like a spooky forest. I don't know if there's any other locations you go to, but this is definitely sci-fi, and like the art style is completely different. They're both like kind of simplified art styles, but in very different ways. Like this, the art style of this feels kind of cel-shaded.
Yeah.
Blocky, polygonal. in ways.
I love the way this game looks.
Yeah, the lighting is like so good. They did a very good job. Also, everything is pretty monochromatic except the boy who has a red shirt. They use colors extremely sparingly on purpose.
That sounds right. I didn't notice that, but yeah, that's cool. Do you have anything else you want to say about Inside before we rate it?
I mean, I feel like if I thought about it more, we definitely could. There's a lot to like talk about in this game in general, just even if we're talking about art style. I guess the sound design would be the only other thing. I mostly remember just the noises the blob makes. but like they do a very good job with the sound design of like setting scenes or like helping to kind of like up the tension. There isn't a ton of music really, but like, for instance, when you have to fall in line to make the same movements as the other NPCs to not get noticed, like that whole puzzle, the sound design can kind of like help you figure it out when you're like hearing them jump or turn and stuff.
Yeah, that's true.
So I do neat little things like that with making it inform the puzzles, which I liked.
It's very cool thing. All right, Roxy, on a scale from 1 to 5 thumbs, here on the Scary Basement, we do have a big old box of hands so we can go over 2 thumbs whenever we rate a thing. How would you rate the video game Inside?
So I gave it a 3.5.
Okay.
Almost a 4, okay, maybe even. I thought it was very good. I enjoyed a lot of things about it. A lot of things are also like kind of ambiguous. I really don't know if the ending is a triumph or not. It felt good until you stop moving. Then I'm like, wait a minute. I don't know how to feel about this, which I think is both interesting, but also kind of frustrating to an extent. So I think it's why it's a little bit lesser and a 3.5 for me. Overall, I really enjoyed it and would highly recommend it to folks. I know we've spoiled a lot of things for it, but if you haven't played it yet, I hope we were able to convince you that you should play it. It's a good game.
I'm very close to you. I gave it a 4 thumbs up. My 2 thumbs and 2 severed thumbs from this big box of hands. I think that these puzzles are great. Like, it's the kind of game that, like, it's there are some games I love The Witness, but I have never gotten far in it because its puzzles are obstructive. These puzzles in Inside are not obstructive. They are like welcoming puzzles. They're the kind of puzzles that you can solve.
They're
and
intuitive.
Feel pretty smart. Yeah.
Yeah, intuitive puzzles are great.
And it does the kind of scares that this game pulls off, where it's like, I don't think there are any jump scares really. It's just like, there is a looming threat and it's slowly getting closer to you. It reminds me of the scene from the movie Zodiac, where there's just like the killer, like there's in the foreground, it's the couple having a meal, like a picnic at a park. Mm-hmm. And just from the tree line, you just see a man walking up and it's just like, this is inevitable. There's nothing we can do about this. Like every time you see a
or like
man.
You're seeing it, but they're not. Like, exactly. Yeah, there's nothing they can do. And you were also impotent to do anything because you're just the viewer. You can't be like, turn around and they'll listen.
I feel like when scary things are happening to me in dreams, that's how they happen. Like, I don't in dreams, like, I'm never like up close with a zombie. It's just like I see a zombie and it's coming towards me, and for whatever reason I'm stuck on a, you know, based on Inside, I'm stuck on a two-dimensional plane and there's nothing I can do because a zombie is coming towards me. And this game like really stirred up those feelings for me when there's just a man in a mask running towards me and there's nothing I can do, and he grabs me and he breaks my little boy neck and I'm just bummed out. I loved it. It made me feel things. The ending was truly surprising, and I love that moment. Also, the other thing I'll say about the ending, like, that ending is exactly as long as it needs to be. You solve, like, 1 or 2 puzzles, but for the most part, you are heading right, stumbling into men, and destroying this factory you're in. It's exactly the length.
That's something we didn't even really talk about in general. The length of this game is great. I love long story experiences, but I also love short games. And like we talked about earlier, like, we all have limited time on this earth. We don't have enough time to play every, like, 100-hour JRPG in existence. So I think this game
or even
talked
one.
Out.
I don't think we should play one. We have to.
If you're Mikey.
I think we should instead, like, learn French.
Yeah, okay, Mr. Frenchman, you go learn your French. I'll just go play, I don't know, Xenogears. Anyway, I appreciate how long this game is, and by long I mean short, I guess. Mm-hmm. It's exactly as long as it needs to be in general, as are like the puzzles. So I think you hitting on that about the final puzzle is very emblematic of just the game itself, which is a very
big thing. Yeah, I beat this game in like 3.5 hours or something.
Yeah, I think I was probably around 4.
Yeah, that and like remembering a bunch of it. Yeah, this is more games should be this length. Come on, I'm busy.
Especially because it's very tight. I think having these tight, very specific experiences is great. A bloated overworld Ubisoft style game where like, okay, we have to get a million towers, have to hit those, where you just have repetitive mission styles just to keep you in the game, wasting your time. It doesn't have respect for your time. Like that, I can't even understand how anybody can play more than one of those. Like you play one because you've never played it before. Then after that, you're like, oh, this is exactly the same thing. And why is this fun? I don't like a more curated, purposeful experience like this is great. And it's the type of game that I feel like I look for a lot and do not find as often. But when you do, oh boy, it's great.
Yeah, this game is truly a Sum 41 album in that it is all killer and no filler. That's the name of Sum 41's 2001 album. Roxy,
okay.
do you have a little personal question that you want to ask me about this game?
I do have a question for you, Mikey. My question is, who would be the 5 people you would choose to form a blob with, living or dead? So asking the age-old question, who would you take to dinner? But in this case, who would you choose to make a blob with?
I like this. I say we should like each say a person and then we'll like go back and forth.
Okay, sure. I didn't really list mine in order of thinking about it, I guess.
Okay.
We'll see. This will be an interesting experiment.
Cool. This will be fun.
Do you want to start?
The first person I would form a human blob with would be Jeff Bezos. Because number one, I would like our blob to have infinite money.
Smart.
But also, I feel like I would be a good influence on him. let's do solve world hunger quick. And he's like in a blob with me. So he's like, all right, fine. We'll just do it. And then we'll continue being a blob.
He has no choice. He's part of the blob hive mind.
Who is your first pick for a human blob?
I guess I was just thinking about who would be a assemblage of fun party guests, I guess, that you could have conversations with till the end of time, I guess. Should have been thinking more on your level of what can I do now that I'm a blob. So, first one on my list was Mary Shelley, who wrote Frankenstein.
Oh!
Because I think she would be cool to talk to. She's the first, like, goth recorded anyway.
And also, like, experience with, like, the creation of monsters that are beyond God.
Yes, exactly. She's one of the progenitors of that. So I feel like she would have some good insight in probably how we could stay sane as a blob. And just, it'd be fun to talk to her. She probably has other fun story ideas that didn't get turned into books. Who knows?
That's a good pick. Mm-hmm. For my second human blob pick, I would pick Andre the Giant.
Okay.
So as to give my blob as much mass as possible. Like, I'm a bigger blob if Andre the Giant is part of my blob.
Mm-hmm. And as we've seen from the game, it's how you kill. So you need to have a defense mechanism. You need to have a way to survive if you're attacked as the blob.
It adds to my lethality.
It does, truly.
Who is your second pick?
My second pick was Marie Curie.
Ooh.
So we got a scientist in the mix, a award-winning scientist, very smart, way smarter than I could ever be. Mm-hmm. Maybe if we don't want to be a blob anymore, she can help me figure that out. And if not, maybe we can make some advances in science with her combined brain power. I can at least apply more brain power. My own brain power right now is failing me. So, yeah, and also just she seems like she'd be a cool person to talk to.
That was exactly my first thought when you said Marie Curie. I was like, oh, yeah, well, if you didn't want to be a blob anymore, she would be able
to. She's got to be able to do it, right? Surely. That was her focus, blob studies.
Her minor. Mm-hmm. Most scientists are minoring in theater. She's over here minoring in blob studies.
What about you, Mikey?
My number three pick, Roxy, is you.
Oh, really?
You're my number three pick. I just think that, like, if we were in a human blob, we could more easily schedule our podcast recordings.
You know, it's true. It would just be like a simpler process. Yeah, just be the same schedule. Very practical, Mikey.
Very practical. Who's your number three?
Also, that means I get infinite money along with you, and we can both overpower Jeff Bezos. Because if there's only you, and if Andre the Giant isn't, like, feeling high-minded enough to solve world hunger that day, then Jeff Bezos might win out. But I think the two of us against him, we'd We'd have the combined power, two against one.
We have more voting shares in the blob. Uh-huh. Who's your three?
My third one, I guess I picked a lot of writers for some reason. I guess I was just on that brain train. I picked Agatha Christie.
Sure. Yeah.
She's good at solving puzzles, good at solving murders, good at creating murders, I guess. Again, would help the blob in problem solving in creative ways. And yeah, I could get her to write more Poirot books, so then I can have lifelong sequels to all of the Poirot books or more Poirot stories.
I could be getting this wrong. Didn't Agatha Christie die under mysterious circumstances or like disappear for a long time?
She disappeared for like a week. That there was a mysterious incident where she disappeared for a week and nobody specifically knows. There's a lot of like, there was some documentation, but then there's other stuff that who knows. So she did have a mysterious week. The mystery writer had a mystery week.
I think that would be cool to be in a human blob with because you could ask her.
Because it solved that mystery finally. Yeah. I've always wondered about it. I gotta know.
Roxy, I'll tell you my next... I'm going to tell you my last two picks at the same time for the human blob. So far, I've formed a human blob with you, Andre the Giant, former WWE champion, and Jeff Bezos, CEO of Amazon. Mm-hmm. My four and five picks to form a human blob with are Ethan Hawke and Julie Defne. These are the stars, Roxy, of the Before trilogy, the Richard Linklater films. They start in the films Before Sunrise, Before Sunset, and Before Midnight.
I have no idea what those movies are. Okay.
Before Sunrise is one of my favorite movies of all time. It's about two people. Played by a very young Ethan Hawke and Julie Defne. Okay. And they meet on a train and they have like sparkling conversation. And Ethan Hawke is just like, do you want to get off this train and just like spend the night in Vienna with me? And she's like, yes, I do. And they do. And they just have this magic. It's just this wonderful little movie of just two people like clearly falling in love and having this wonderful connection.
That
and then
really
9 years later, they make a movie called Before Sunset, which I also watched immediately after Before Sunrise, about them 9 years later meeting up again, sort of by chance, and just talking about what happened to their life.
Wait, so they just had one night and then
they just had one night and then they never see each other for 9 years.
Oh, okay.
And then the next movie takes place 9 years later, and it's very sweet. It's similarly, they're just talking about their lives and they're learning more about each other, and they have just such charisma and chemistry together. I haven't seen Before Midnight. It's not on HBO Max, so I couldn't watch it.
Okay.
I don't know what happens. They do another movie 9 years after that, and I think they might be together in that one. I don't know. But the point is, I think in a human blob, we need love. We need love between those two, and I just want them to be together, and I love and care about their relationship, and I think a human blob is the perfect context for them to do that.
Mikey, I hate to break your blob bubble, but you said the actors, not the characters from it. So does this mean, do we know if they really are in love in real life?
I don't think they are, but they did write the movie together, like with Richard Linklater.
Oh, did they?
Yes.
Okay,
because so much of it is just like, I remember this story from my life, and I'll tell you what this makes me think of. Like, it's very clearly them.
Okay, so they have like the analytical or, I guess, thought process or desire for knowing what love is.
It would honestly just make me happy to see them together in a human blob for all of time.
Well, I mean, in this theoretical universe, you get to. So congratulations.
Yeah. So go ahead, hit me with your final two human blob picks.
Okay, so my next two, one of them, the next one is Yoshi P, who is the director or the producer for Final Fantasy 14. So
if he lives
in the blob, that means he can never die and the game can go on forever. And also, maybe I can make some suggestions and help.
Right, give him some notes.
Yeah, give him some notes and maybe make some choices. That'd be rad.
That's pretty good.
Also, I get to know everything before anybody else, so I get all the info first. I get to be in the know, Mikey.
Roxy, would you want that? Would you want to have Final Fantasy XIV perpetually spoiled for you by being in the creative process, by sharing a giant body with the creator?
I mean, can we turn our brain off partially sometimes if I don't want to know that week? I don't know.
It's a good question.
Way, too late. I've already made the choice. He's there.
Okay, fair enough.
The game goes forever. And then my last choice was, surprisingly, Keanu Reeves. Because he seems like a great guy. It seems like he'd be a good dude to hang out with. I've always wanted to meet him. And he brings a very chill energy to it, I think. So, you know, if we get a little too rowdy in there, I feel like he could maybe chill everyone out a little bit. Also, he has a lot of training, stunt training and everything with John Wick. So we'd have some defensive power to an extent, at least stunt trained.
I also just saw John Wick 1 for the first time.
Really?
On the same day that I watched Before Sunrise and Before Sunset.
Ooh, movie marathon.
I had a big movie day. Yeah, Keanu Reeves is a good. You don't want your human blob to be like really anxious and antsy. Like Keanu Reeves, you're exactly right. Would chill it out a little bit. You'd have a good energy with your human blob.
Yeah,
and
now we've got some amount of star power. So even if we're amorphous blob, maybe we can star in some movies someday. But we'll become the new face of humanity, Mikey. As blobs.
All right, Roxy, that'll do it for our coverage of Inside. But we'll be back next month with more Press X to Scream. Let's hear from the creepy old demon bot as to what game we'll be reviewing next time.
Mikey and Roxy, for next month you must review the game Dead Space. As the remake only came out a few days ago, I will allow you to choose between the 2008 original by Visceral Games or the 2023 remake by Motive Studio.
Hey, that's fair. I like DemonBot looking out for us.
Okay, yeah, we got a backup plan. That's not what we normally get. So, hey, episode 2, looking out for us. Got a redundancy in place.
Since you must procure the games on your own, I feel it is only fair to allow you to read the reviews before paying $70 for a game that may or may not live up to the original.
Thanks, DemonBot. I appreciate that. Looking out for my wallet.
All right, Roxy. So for next month, if you want to play along with us, pick up Dead Space 1 or remake, up to you.
Who knows? Yeah, we'll figure it out.
I guess we should probably tweet about it. You know, follow at @scarybasement_ on Twitter, and we'll probably let you know once
it's out,
the Dead Space reviews start dropping. Mm-hmm. Roxy, we've talked about a lot of scary things this episode.
Oh boy.
Human possession, giant blobs, dogs, some dogs.
Is the soul real?
Let's talk about something less scary in the video game realm. What video games are you playing that aren't terrifying?
So one of the games I played most recently actually was Final Fantasy IV, and it's the pixel remaster version.
I thought, Roxy, you famously love Final Fantasy XIV. Uh-huh. I thought you were going to just like nonchalantly be like, one of the games I've been playing is Final Fantasy XIV, and you are one syllable away from it.
I wasn't meaning to prank you, but I love how I pranked you by accident in this way. best outcome I could have received.
It's pretty good. Okay, so you're playing Final Fantasy IV.
Yeah, I had like never played any of the pixelated ones. The first one I started with was like 7 and 8. PlayStation era was my era of games. So when I see stuff like pixel art when I was growing up, I was like, that's old games. I want polygons. So going back into these pixel art games, especially now they have the pixel remaster versions, which are like improved versions that you can play like on modern stuff. So I was playing it on Steam. Right. It's like very simple hero's journey, has a couple twists here and there that I did not expect. Relatively straightforward, relatively short. Like it does not overstay its welcome, really. It cycles through party members like crazy, which was not what I was expecting. I just figure out like a move set and be like, okay, this is how I use this character. And then they're gone forever. And then I get someone new and I have to figure that out. Keeps you on your toes.
Is this like story reasons or it's just like the game is cycling through like different
story reasons? Story reasons.
Oh, interesting.
Notoriously, so many characters like died that I was not expecting. I was like, what? Okay.
Oh, no.
But it ends with you like fighting an evil alien on the moon that is like up to no good. And it has like this crazy design that is really interesting and weird. So it's very fun to like kind of go back in time and play this like improved version of the original and find out what the hell it was all about in some of these landmark games that like established one of my favorite game series of all time.
Is this boss called Zeromus?
Yep, Zeromus.
I did just Google Final Fantasy IV final boss to see what it looks like. It looks like the there's a mini boss from Super Metroid that it looks exactly
like. It does. He would look at home in a Metroid game for sure.
Yeah.
And he's got a couple of different forms, as you might expect. So he, like, starts out as a weird-looking wizard guy, then gets defeated, and then he transforms into that big thing where he's like, oh, killing my body only made me stronger. My hate made me so angry I became a weird Metroid boss.
And I get like that when I'm full of hate, too.
One of the characters can just, like, throw equipable weapons and they're gone forever. So that's what I was just doing at the end. I was literally just throwing and he died.
That's fun.
It was very fun. What about you, Mikey? What game are you playing this week that made you happy?
I am replaying one of my favorite video games of all time, God of War 2018.
Oh, okay.
I just finished yet, God of War Ragnarok. You know, I got that game the day it came out and plowed through it and liked it a lot, but felt like the story didn't hold up as strong as I remembered the last game's story holding up, the first game where Kratos is playing with his boy Atreus. Mm-hmm. And so I was just like, I got to double check. I got to see if I was wrong or if it's just like I had too high expectations for the sequel. And so I'm replaying God of War 1, which in my brain, it's God of War 1. Mm-hmm. And it's so good. It really is so good. It's just like such a tight, focused story. It's Kratos and Atreus are trying to climb a mountain so they can spread Kratos's wife, Atreus's mother's ashes. And everything flows from that, as opposed to like God of War Ragnarok, which I kind of struggled with because it feels very disparate. Things kind of just happen, and I don't buy a lot of the characters' motivations. Things just happen that they're just like, they tell me they feel that way, but I'm like, I don't know if I believe that. Everything is so tight in this first game, and it just like it feels fun to play. That is absolutely true of the second game as well. It just like feels good. I love throwing that big old axe that Kratos has and hacking off the limbs of underground monsters. Hell yeah, baby. And I got a little boy who is cute and fires arrows when I press square.
That's nice.
I know what I'm looking for in a game. Yeah, it's cool.
Well, that's wonderful. I'm glad that you had such a great experience going back to an old favorite like that, especially after playing like a newer one that is like the sequel.
Yeah.
Because sometimes you're not going to get that experience where it's like, oh yeah, it was the way I remember. Or it wasn't.
Yeah, I was glad that it wasn't like I have a couple of I always refer to Garden State as the movie that like,
yes,
I loved it when I saw it in 2004. I will never watch that movie again because I am confident it sucks. I have never been more sure of anything. That movie fucking sucks. But I have such positive memories of it that I'm just going to let them sit in my heart.
Yeah, you can do that. And you should do that.
I'm allowed, baby. Roxy, it is time now for haunted plugs. First of all, make sure that you're following Scary Basement on Twitter at @scary_basement and on Instagram at @scarybasementpod. Roxy, where can people find you on the internet?
I'm on Twitter as RedMageRoxy, and I am on Twitch as RedMageRoxy, where I stream 3 days a week, every Tuesday, Thursday, and Sunday.
And I, too, am on Twitter at SecretBlimp, and you can find me on Twitch at twitch.tv/SecretBlimp. Make sure to subscribe to Scary Basement. Go give us 5 stars on iTunes or wherever you're listening to podcasts.
Also, leave us a review. It really helps us out. And another way you can support us is by checking out the Patreon for our podcast network, Super NPC. Sign up at patreon.com/supernpcradio, and you can get bonus episodes of Scary Basement covering horror video games, as well as years and years of content from the rest of the video game loving folks over at Super NPC.
Don't forget to share and scare this podcast with your friends and come back next month for another video game related episode. And as always, do not sign any contracts offered to you by demon robots.
See you next month as you once again press X to scream.